So if you are in the book of Genesis, it's where we have been studying. I would like for you to turn there. And we're in chapter 34, Genesis 34. And this is one of those chapters that you go, oh my goodness, is that really in the Bible? It is. It's really there. And so we're going to talk about some things about Jacob and really about his sons more than anything and what they did. And it's one of those things that's pretty amazing. So let's just go ahead and get started. Genesis 34, if you wouldn't mind standing with me, I'm going to read the first 12 verses. I guess that's a certain section, at least through where they try to make an arrangement for marriage, and we'll see how that all turns out. Genesis 34, starting in verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this woman as a wife." And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife, and make marriages with us. Give us your daughters, give your daughters to us, and take our daughters to yourselves, so that you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell in and trade in it, and acquire possessions for yourself in it." Then Shechem said to her father and to his brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give." And he asked, "Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give it according to what you say to me. But give me the young woman as a wife." Thank you. You may be seated. Father, we're so grateful for the truthfulness of your word and the things that you talk about and teach us, and the things that you want us to understand are pretty significant, Father. And we know that the things that are in this story are sometimes a little bit difficult, but you want us to know the truth about these people and that we call patriarchs and about their lives. And Father, help us to learn principles from this text that will help us in our everyday lives. Even though it seems like extreme event that's taking place, there are really good principles in here, Father. So we just pray you give us those, the understanding we need, and Holy Spirit, open up our eyes and help us to be focused on your word and not on other things that we might have planned for the day or for the week. And we just thank you for this privilege again in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. So again, this is kind of one of those more shameful events. But yet at the same time, I think about if men were to write the Bible and men were to try to put together and try to create their own little religion and all that, you know, they probably wouldn't be so blunt with what we're seeing with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? We wouldn't be so, we wouldn't paint them in a picture like, well, they're not such great people. They've made big mistakes. We wouldn't do that. But this is God, and God's laying out the cards and making sure that it's very clear that this is our very nature as we're born. Unless we're born again, we get a new nature and all that. But as we are born in this world, we have a nature to do very evil and perverse things. Obviously, some are worse than others. So hopefully you have the handout. That's going to refer to it just a couple of times, but I want you to get a little sense for it. Let me just start by read the first two sentences at the very top, because it's kind of a summary to get us into where we are, where we just left in chapter 33, and as we move into 34, and they work so well together. Jacob has survived his reunion with his brother Esau. Survived, I use that word, because he was pretty convinced that he was going to die when he sees Esau, especially when he's coming with the 400 men and all that. He survived this reunion with his brother Esau and settled his family in the land of Canaan, which is what he was supposed to do, but not exactly where he was supposed to be. He was in the land of Canaan, proper in the big scheme, but he was not where he was supposed to be. And we'll talk about that as we go on. So he settled his family in the land of Canaan in a city called Shechem. Some time passes, then Jacob's daughter, Dinah, is raped by the sons of the ruler of the city, which is where we're going to be at here. So the point is, he's been in Shechem for some time, and those kids, as they're traveling, remember as they were leaving Laban and all that from Haran, they're growing up now, so there's probably been a couple years, and so they're getting older. It looks like she's in teenage at this time. So to exact revenge, and defend their sister's honor, they come up with a plan. A couple of her brothers will do this, come up with a plan, and it's an evil plan that we'll go into the details as we go into the text. So let me just start with this idea. Verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. That doesn't give you much detail other than say she went out. And I was sort of thinking, a lot of times we realize that, you know, when you are young, when you're a teenager, you realize at that time that you know more than adults, right? Everybody here knows the concept. We know as teenagers we're invincible. We know anything and everything. It's not like a new concept. The world knows that too. And I thought about a couple of songs. I'm not going to sing them, but a couple of songs, I'll give you a little bit of the verses of them, and you're going to recognize them. You're going to see the idea. We were different when we're young or youth versus when we become adults, and very different. But let me start out with in Proverbs 22:15 before I go into the songs. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child or a youth. Foolishness. They think they have it all figured out, but it ends up proving itself to be foolishness, and we know there are many passages that deal with the youth, and especially in the Proverbs that deal with that. But the first one, I'm just going to read a little bit of a verse from the Beatles song Help. Everyone probably knows the song, I've heard the song Help. It came out in 1965. John and Paul wrote the song, and they said, "When I was younger, so much younger than today." So they're referring back to when they were very young and very smart, and they never needed anybody's help in any way. When you're a teenager, you need no help. You got it all figured out in your mind. You know, they know everything, and nothing can happen to them. They're invincible. He said, "But now these days are gone. I'm not so self-assured." Right? You were self-assured. You didn't need assurance from others. You just self-assured because I'm a teenager and I can do anything. And that, of course, goes into the 20s as well, where they think that they can do anything, they're invincible, they know everything, they know more than adults and all that. But then he said, "But now I've opened up the door. My mind has changed. I've opened up the door." The idea is, now I realize I do need help from other people. I need their input. I need what their thinking is, because I really don't have it all figured out, even though as a youth you usually think that you do. But the one that really came to my mind, just from my own memory, was going back to 1967 with the Birds. They sang the song, "Oh, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now." It's a paradox. It actually was written by Bob Dylan, was the one who wrote the words, but the Birds sang it and made it very popular. And so it's kind of like, back then when I was younger, I knew it all, right? And now that I'm older, I realize that I don't know it all. And some of us, as we get older, we realize we really don't know it all. I mean, there's so much that we don't know. But at that point, they get to the point where they think that everything is, they're invincible. And this is Dinah, and she's young, and she's a teenager, and apparently she's leaving the camp to go into the city. Remember, they're not actually in the city, they're outside of the city. So she decides to go into the city. Let me just read that verse 1 again. "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, when she went out to see the daughters of the land." So it looks like she's like either looking for friendship or whatever. She's looking for the daughters of the land with the idea of, you know, I need to get out. I can't be stuck here and looking at the city and seeing people coming and going, and I want to be able to be out there. And so that's what seems to be what's going on here, where she just wants to connect with some people her age, most likely. Doesn't work out exactly the way she thinks, right? So they're getting older. She's thinking she can go in there and be safe. It appears she went by herself. Obviously, she's invincible. She's a teenager, right? Nothing can happen to her. So she goes into the situation thinking that she's going to be okay. She's going to find some people, some other girls, maybe her age, and they can connect and all that. That seems to be the obvious implication. She's not looking for a guy. She's looking for some ladies, some other girls in the towns, which is what the text says. I think that's pretty important. But you understand that the culture isn't a particularly moral culture. I mean, they have their morals and they have their own standards and all that. But the way when we think about dating today in today's world, we think of it as courtship and we think of it as getting to know each other. Well, a lot of times there, the guys, when they wanted something, they said, I want that, and they would just go for it, as sad as that is. And that's exactly what happened here. He says, oh, I like that. I don't know where she's from, but I want that. And he violated her in a pretty obvious way. She didn't really realize that that would probably be the case. Obviously, I don't think she went in there with that to happen, with that intention. You know, and the idea of waiting, let me just put out an old research. The Stanford researchers put out this test. It was called the marshmallow test. And you talk to these kids who are like four-year-olds, and you say, listen, I got to run inside and do an errand, and I'll give you this one marshmallow while I'm running that errand, or if you wait till I come back, I'll give you two marshmallows. And most of them grabbed the one marshmallow. But the point of the test was, they found out that they scored an average of 210 points lower on the SAT test. Those that want instant gratification, those that didn't want to wait for the extra a little bit longer, they didn't do as well on the SAT test. And then the adolescents, they tended to get themselves more in trouble. Those that grabbed, you know, they had the number of years to watch them. But those that were the one that were looking for an instant gratification, didn't wait. I'll wait for the two. Those persons did much better on their tests and had less trouble when they became teenagers. I just going to kind of point that out because it's not a new phenomenon. We all understand that when we were younger, you know, our teens and our 20s, that's when we knew everything and we were invincible. But then we come to realize that's not really the case at all. And so she gets herself in trouble as a result, I think. Verse 2, when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her, lay with her, and violated her. And it's pretty strong language. Now let me clarify something. Shechem is the name of the city. Shechem is the name of the son that did this event. So Hamor, the tribal leader of that region, he named his son after the city. And so some people say actually the city was named after the son. So at that point it's hard to say. But the Shechem, the son that violated Dinah, is the same name as the city itself. They're like calling somebody Spokane. We couldn't name him Spokane, right? Same idea. So anyway, in this context, I want you to know that this is a group that were Canaanites, if you want to call them that, and they were those that were not circumcised, and that's going to become an issue here. Many that in that context, in that region, were actually circumcised. There was two groups that were not actually, like the Philistines and these Hivites. These guys were the two that were not, but everybody else were people that were circumcised. And remember, circumcision was a sign of God to the people of Israel to be separate from the world and all that went with it. So anyway, all the Canaanite tribes did practice this circumcision. So we go into that, you see why that's important. Okay, verse 3. His soul was strongly attached to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. So no matter how much he liked her, it obviously doesn't erase what he did to her. Obviously, that was a bad thing. It was an evil thing. But he looks like he's wanting to do the right thing, right? Okay, I really like her. And then he goes on and said, and he loved her, the young woman, and spoke kindly to the young woman. Spoke kindly, it literally is, he spoke to her heart. He spoke nicely, kindly to her. Now understand, and don't forget, the guys can do that. They can speak nicely to a girl and all that. And it may not be that they really, truly do love them. Now, he says that he loved her. So I'm going to assume that he did. But how much can you love somebody when you just met them and you just violated them? It looks like your self-gratification is what you're after more than anything. And so that's an important concept. Men can do these things, and women wanting to be connected with guys, and maybe even a romantic sense, will disbelieve whatever the guy says, even if the guy says, I know what to say, and she'll give in, and you get the idea. She got violated, and that's obviously a bad thing. So that's what's going on in this first couple of verses there, the first four, is that she gets violated. And then there's going to be a consequence for this. There's going to be the result. So 5 through 7 is going to be a lack of outrage. I have two senses here. A lack of outrage and anger of two of the brothers. So if you just look briefly at the bottom left-hand corner of the handout, you have Leah and the children of Leah. Right? There is, in order, it was Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. Dinah is the same daughter we're talking about here that got violated. The two sons that get involved here initially is Simeon and Levi. The other sons don't get involved. They were in a little different way, but for as far as this plan is concerned, they're the ones that really get angry. And remember, they're all full brothers and sisters. They got half brothers and sisters because of the other wives and other children that Jacob had. But these are all full-blooded Jacob and Leah children, so there's an attachment there. I'm sure as you go into the look at the family situation, they were very, they did things together in this family because they had different tents. Remember, the different women would actually have their own tents. And so the family would oftentimes be in their own tents. So they obviously were closer to each other than the other half-brothers and all that. Okay, verse 6. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him. So he's going to try to fix this. He's in charge. And you know, I've been thinking about this whole time where Jacob is sitting kind of outside the city. Does that sound like Lot when he was sitting outside the city of Sodom? Next thing you know, he's kind of getting in the city, and then before you know, he's actually in charge. He's a leader within the city. I mean, it's kind of, I see the similarities. Sitting outside the city, watching things coming and going, yet he's not actually in the city. Well, now they're going to try to merge him into the city. So Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak to him, and so he obviously wants to smooth things over. Verse 7, and the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they had heard it, and the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel. This is interesting, that verse there, because when he says in Israel, he's using it in a sense that Moses and the Israelites would use it, like in the nation. Because up to this point, it's when you say Israel, you're referring to the person Jacob, which his name was changed to Israel, right? So now it's actually using it in a sense of the context of which Moses is writing this book, which is like in the land of Israel, among the people of Israel, this thing ought not to be something that's done within the land. So he's using it in that future sense, 1440, 1400 BC era, which is 400 years later, right? So he's using it in that sense. So because again, he's writing to an audience initially, and the audience are the newly built nation of Israel that God built as he brings them out in the Exodus. So again, because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. And obviously that is an evil thing. And so it's a thing that in the community, it affects the entire community. Or it's one guy and one girl, and so it doesn't affect everyone. Well, we'll see. We're going to see that it affects a lot more people. It didn't have to affect as much as it did. It got taken out of hand. They took it far too far. But the idea is, obviously, he's trying to, as a leader, he's trying to smooth it over because even in their world, they know this. He shouldn't have done it the way that he did. His son violated Dinah, and that's a big deal. So the family members of Dinah are very angry. Now, 8 through 12, they're going to seek marriage, which sounds like a good thing to do. Okay, I blew it, not like a shotgun marriage. Okay, you will marry her or I shoot you type of thing, right? But they didn't have shotguns. But they had other ways. They had spears and all that. But the idea, you see, but the leader of the town is taking the initiative to make this right, right? Verse 8, but Hamor spake with them. And so you're going to have Jacob there, and you're going to have at least a couple of the brothers there. He spoke with them. The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife. It seems like a natural right thing to say. He's really wanting her. He really likes her. And I'm sitting there thinking about it in my mind. Daddy, I really want her. Can you make this happen? And Daddy, the leader, comes in and says, I'm going to make this right for my son. I'm going to get him what he wants. He wants the daughter. I'm going to see what I can do to make it happen. I really do see it like he's a spoiled brat. Getting whatever he wants, and Daddy can make it happen for him, and Daddy's trying to make it happen for him, and there's a pattern there. So anyway, verse 9. And make marriages with us. So this is the beginning of something I think that's interesting. He's beginning to make some promises. He's trying to make this marriage work, and he's trying to expand it to be just more than just a marriage. He wants it to be a real covenant between them and these Israelites and Jacob and his family. So in the first, let me point this out. What does Dinah want? We don't know. No one ever asked the question in the text. What do you want? Do you want to get married to this guy? Do you like this guy? I know he violates you and all that, but we never see where her opinion and her thoughts are even brought into the mix at all. And when you get later on, the idea of the law, I want you to understand that the law was written to protect women. When you get to that point, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But there's certain passages that are so good. The whole point of it is to protect women, because women had no rights. They were treated like property. It was just, you know, from the world standpoint, it'd be very degraded, right? We think about today's context, we think they were treated very poorly. The law will be written in a way that will protect them. So anyway, we'll go to that, verse 9. And make marriages with us again. So make marriages with us is the idea. Not just this one. We want it to become a bigger thing. Remember, these are Canaanites. And that's going to become a big deal. Eventually, God's going to tell them to wipe out the Canaanites because of the Baal worship and all the different things that they get involved with, and child sacrificing and all that. So God's going to have them to be killed later. But God doesn't want them, he mentioned it earlier, to marry into and with Canaanites. So these Canaanites are inviting them to go ahead and share wives and women with one another. And make marriages with us, give your daughters to us, and take our daughters to yourselves. Let it be a two-way street. I think you got to understand in this context, you can't really tell that other than through history, but Shechem is a town. They were not as powerful as Jacob was. He's a much larger group, believe it or not. The town's not a very large town. Jacob and his group and all the he had the cattle and the goats and all this stuff and sheep and all that stuff. But he had a lot of money also. That's important. He had a lot of influence. The city of Shechem actually would benefit the most from this deal than Jacob would benefit from it. First thing, so you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. He's trying to say, all this shall be your. Well, he's already got a big area over here. This land, this little area of the city, which isn't very large. When we think city, we think large. It's not that large. A couple hundred feet by a couple hundred feet, and everyone's living inside of it. It's not like it's a very large city. And of course, Shechem will actually have a history. We're going to see them in Judges and Hosea and Jeremiah. We'll mention them. And every time something happens in Shechem, it's never a good thing. But I want you to understand it's not a big, large area. So verses 10 through 12, he's actually going through these promises. Let me summarize the promises. He said, you shall dwell with us in verse 10. Okay, so they want us to be like, we're all going to become one, is the picture, is what they want. The land shall be before you. Well, you can have this, all this, and there'll be no struggle with you taking more land and more area if you need to. So he's saying this to Jacob. So it's kind of to me, it's a spiritual temptation. God told him don't do any deal with the Canaanites, and these Canaanites were making a really nice offer, it sounds like, right? In a positive way. He said, it looks like it's positive. And verse 10, dwell in and trade with us. So he wants the idea, take your possessions and you can trade with us. And again, the city's more likely to benefit from it. And you'll see that a couple of verses from there. They're going to more benefit from it than Jacob would. Remember, Jacob's already rich. Jacob's already got a lot going on, right? Number 4, I had the acquire property, possessions for yourself. Verse 10 also, the idea you can have land. They already are. I think they're thinking more like in a permanent place and buy a lot and buy. But remember, Jacob already has a lot more. So they're making an offer, but it's, if you really think about it, it's not a great offer. And the whole point is about the violation with Dinah, and they're just trying to smooth it over and maybe win something that Shechemites might win over it. They said, verse 11, and we'll get to that in a moment, but whatever you say, I will give you, right? So whatever you say. And then he goes on to verse 12, ask me so much dowry and a gift. whatever you say, and I'll also give a dowry, and I'll also give a gift. They're going to give all this because of the son that violated Dinah. They're going to make this offer to Jacob, and it looks like a good deal on the surface. Look at verse 11. But then Shechem said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give." Again, that's the idea that, you know, you can have whatever you want. I really want her and all that goes with it. So, as we go on, I think you're going to see they had other motives going on as well. Verse 12, then he goes on with the idea, "Ask me ever so much dowry and gift." Remember, the dowry was money that was set aside for a wife, if, in case something ever happened to the husband dies, and they were paid to the father of the bride money. So, because everybody, when you had a family back then, family unit, everybody worked. Everybody did something. Everybody watched the cattle, or they did this, or they watered, or they brought. Everybody had some kind of a task. They all had their chores they had to do. And so when you marry off somebody, whatever chores they did, well, the dowry was to help support, offset that. You no longer have that person as a helper. She's now gone. She married to somebody else, and I lost that. She would be the one to go down every day and bring the water down from the well, bring it into the tents, or whatever. That's no longer an option. So the dowry was about paying, compensating for what you're losing as far as a helper is concerned. So, okay, they want to get this marriage, and they make this great offer, and it looks like all these things, we're going to do all this thing for you, Jacob, if you disagree to this great idea. Verse 13 through 17 is going to be kind of a counter offer. They're like, yeah, okay, anything you want, anything we say. Well, here's their offer, and it's the two sons that are making this offer. The two sons would be Simeon and Levi, right? They're the ones that are making this offer, full-blooded, brothers of Dinah. But the sons of Jacob, again, those two, answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully. Now, that deceitfully, that noun is used several times in the Bible. The first one was whenever Jacob deceived his brother Esau. Isaac actually used that phrase in Genesis 27, verse 35. But he said, "Your brother came in with deceit," same word, "and has taken away your blessing." Remember, he deceived them, had the hair on his arms, and he tried to smell like him, like Esau and all that. And Isaac realized that he had been deceived by Jacob, and he actually said, that's the word he used, that deceit. It's actually the same word that's used. Remember when Laban deceived Jacob into marrying Leah first? It's the same exact word. So it really has a connotation of it's very evil. And what he's saying there, they spoke deceitfully because they had defiled Dinah, their sister. So they're like, we're going to act like we're going to go along with this agreement. We're going to make this agreement with you. But they really have no intention doing whatever they're about to say. Remember, they learned already a lot from their own father. Remember, that what wasn't very long ago, last chapter, that Jacob was with Esau, and Esau made this offer that, you know, come on down to Edom and come visit us. He said, oh yeah, we'll come down eventually. He kept trying to help him. Esau did say no, but he said, I don't need you. Don't bring, we'll get there eventually. Remember the deceitfulness of, well, the kids are good. They're young and the animals are young and they won't be able to survive. Knowing, so the kids heard their father say, yeah, I'll go south with you, knowing they're going to go north and then a little bit west, right? They didn't have any intention of, you know, doing what they said, the promise to Esau. Well, they're doing exactly what their father did now with these people of Shechem. They're lying to them. They have no intention in, doing whatever they're about to say. They're about to lie in a pretty obvious way. 14. And he said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised," right? This is important, "for that would be a reproach to us." So it's kind of like a half-truth and a half-lie. Well, it's true, they're not supposed to associate with the uncircumcised, but they're going to turn something that's supposed to be a blessing, something that's supposed to be a sign of your relationship with the Lord, they're going to turn it into something perverted, is what they're about to do. And that's pretty obvious. This is supposed to be a sign between Israel and the Lord and Yahweh, and they're going to pervert it in a bad way. Verse 15, but on this condition, we will consent to you. Okay, so we got a condition that you'll probably go with. If you can do this, he's not asking for money. Again, they already have money. They're not asking for any riches of any sort. They have this a deceitful plan. But on this condition, we will consent to you, we'll give in to you, if you will become as we are. Oh, that's so proud, so arrogant. If every male of you is circumcised. Okay, so that they're the one group, the Philistines and the Hivites here, or the group in Canaan that are not circumcised. Well, most of them around Canaan actually were circumcised, would do circumcision. Remember, most of them would do it as an adult. It was when he was talking to God, spoke to Abraham, that he told him to do it when they're 8 days old. That becomes the tradition, and that becomes exactly what the Israelites would do later as a child. A lot of reasons for doing it at the time as opposed to as an adult. Actually, doing it as an adult becomes a key factor as we go on. Verse 16, and we will give our daughters to you. Okay, they have no intention on doing that. This is just words. They're lying. And we will take your daughters to us. Okay, give and take. It seems like an even trade. And we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. That's really, I think that Satan is loving this, because he's wanting to corrupt Israel at this stage just as well as they do later on as they become a full-fledged nation. He's still wanting to corrupt them. If they become part of the Canaanites, which God told them not to be associating with, and not like his in this kind of relationship point, then obviously they're going to be corrupted. And that's what they're wanting. And that little phrase, we will become one people, is a kind of a scary thing. And again, this is being presented as an offer, as a good thing, right? 17, but if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone. Well, they did not really want that to be the case. They were really hoping that they go, maybe we can do something with this circumcision. Maybe we'll do this. But again, you know, we don't know their full motive, but they're going to find out. Their motive, Hamor and Shechem, is going to be, they're looking at the whole thing as a profit situation. So verse 17, let me read it again. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone. So they're like saying, okay, if you don't play the way we want you to play, we're going to take our marbles and leave, is an old phrase, right? We're not going to play with you, not going to work with you. Hamor's not going to get, his son's not going to get the Dinah, and all that goes with it. So you can see there's going to be a little bit of stress there if they choose not to do it. That actually would have been the right thing, I think, in this context, but we'll go on. 18 through 24, where Hamor is the chief of that town, and he's going to go out and convince all the men of this plan, right? So verse 18. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So they're like, oh, this is all we got to do. It's not going to cost us anything. Oh, this is good. Well, is it going to cost you? Everyone's got to perform this physical act on their bodies, on the male bodies, right? So anyway, they're not trying to convince them to believe in Yahweh. In fact, you may notice a couple of things that are missing in this chapter. Prayer and God. I mean, they're just not even mentioned. Everything's on a human level. Everything's on a fleshly level, this whole conversation. And so they're not asking them by being circumcised to believe in God and believe in Yahweh. They just want them to go through this ritual because they want to take advantage of it against these people. 19. So the young man did not delay to do the thing. So right away, he's like Shechem saying, yeah, I want Dinah, I'm doing it right away. Does seem to have some honor. He's like, okay, this is the agreement we're making, let's do it. Because he delighted in Jacob's daughter, he was more honorable than all the household of his father. Well, then the honorable is not going to last very long, but to get the idea, he was doing what he's supposed to do. He did blow it initially by violating Dinah in the first place, but it looks like they're trying to fix it, and they're making an agreement, this tribe and Jacob, and they're working together, and they made an agreement. We can do this, right, is the idea, is the picture there. So verse 20, and Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city, which is where you normally did a legal transaction, social gathering at the gate, and where you do legal things, and they're going to have a conversation. They spoke with the men of the city, So they're saying, this is what we need to do. This is a good thing. And the men of the city must think it's a good thing. And also, you got to remember, the tribal leader is usually somebody who's well respected. If he's offering this as an idea, as a plan, then they're like, well, I don't normally think I would want to do that, but because it's him, and because he's the one offering, he's the one suggesting, then I think we'll do that. That seems to be the idea. They're going to go with it because of who he is. 21, these men are at peace with us. That's a good way of starting up. These guys have been sitting outside the town for quite a while, and you know who they are. They're at peace with us. We haven't had any issues with them, right? We all get that. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. So it doesn't appear like they've been doing a lot of trading within the city, but he's trying to open up the door. Let that happen now. We should be able to trade like they're part of us, right? They're opening up the door to Jacob. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Well, yeah, they probably would need to expand the town if they started living in the town. Jacob, remember, is outside the town, not in the city walls, if you will, which is for protection. But he stayed outside. He was okay because he had his own force. He had his own men, his own servants that would protect them and all that. So let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives. Okay, that's part of the deal, right? And let us give them our daughters in return. So again, give and take seems like a reasonable thing. Hamor is saying it to all his people. This is the plan that we want to do. Only on this condition, there's only one condition here, verse 22, that the men will consent to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Well, they do it, and many of the other Canaanites around us do it. Only we and those Philistines, which are from Greece, from the Aegean Sea, they're sea peoples, only those two groups of people are uncircumcised. Well, we can be like the rest of the Canaanites, and like Jacob and all that, we can be circumcised as well. And they're only thinking in fleshly, physical sense. They're not thinking about the relationship to God as a sign that circumcision is supposed to be. 23, will not their livestock. Now this is interesting. Verse 23 helps us understand the men of the city's thinking. They know about Jacob. They know how rich he is. They know all that he has out there. Will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Right. So they're going to benefit from it in a big time way. They're going to grow as a city in a big-time way. They're going to actually have a lot more wealth now in a large way. You see, they're, from their standpoint, this is going to be good. It all started because of a violation, but we're turning it into this is an opportunity for our town. Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us. It's so simple. Just do what they ask, and everything's going to be fine. Well, kind of. And they do. And it does seem like the people, although they understand that they're going to benefit monetarily in a way that they never had before, probably going to grow in a big-time way because of all the wealth that Jacob brings into the mix, they do have that, but they're still trying to fix the problem, and the men are agreeing with their leader. 24, and all who went out of the gate of his city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son, meaning that one condition was to be circumcised. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. So they all came, and he said, this is what you need to do. You need to do this. Be circumcised. And verse 25 is all kind of by itself. It's kind of like the horror verse, right? In verse 25, right? Verse 25, now it came to pass on the third day, if you understand what's going on, the physical sense that's going on, there's the first day where the circumcision is taking place, and it's sore and all that goes with it initially, but as it gets going on, a couple of days later, it actually becomes worse if you are circumcised as a male, as an adult. It's obviously the men, Levi and Simeon, they knew precisely what would happen if you're circumcised as an adult. Now it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly into the city and killed all the males. So, again, we don't know what the real population of that region was at that time, But the bottom line is, they come in there knowing that they're going to be sore and not going to be able to defend themselves. Even picking up a sword would have hurt at that time because they're still healing and it's going to take some time. And they knew after 3 days, that's the perfect time. They planned this all along. We're going to take advantage of them. So because of what one guy did with one girl, the entire town of males are slaughtered. So, you know, this is why, again, the idea of the law is about bringing justice in a proper way. When you hear the phrase, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, it's not about getting revenge and beyond. It's to make sure that the punishment is equal to the crime. You don't want to, okay, here's the crime, I'm going to bring this kind of punishment. Well, that's what we got going on here. It wasn't equal. It could have been to stone the son or something. It could have been to kill Hamor, his son, Shechem. Could have been something like that. But no, they decided to kill the whole men. All those men had nothing to do with this. So this is not equal justice. This was deceitful. That was the whole plan of it. I think that's pretty obvious. Then verse 26 to 29, okay, so not only do they kill the men, they go on and do more. And they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword. Those two initially, they're killed. They go out of their way to let you know they were killed first. They're the leaders. And took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. Oh, so when he had Dinah, he not only had her, he had her in his house already. He had no intention of giving her up. I want to keep her. Daddy, you know, Hamor, go out there and tell them whatever you need to do, but I want to be able to keep her. And so that's she was actually in their home. So the question becomes, one of how did the sons find out about it? In the first place, it was one of my challenge questions. How did they find out? If she's in the home of Shechem, and she would have been the one violated, how did it come out to them, Jacob and his sons, to find out that this violation even took place? Somehow, when the men showed up, it appears that might have been, they're saying, I don't know, you probably don't know that this happened, but my son did this, and I'm letting you know. They seemed to be honorable at that point. Again, the men of Shechem seemed to be very honorable. The leaders were. 26 again, and they killed Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. So they're about to do a lot more to that town than just kill the people. So the sons of Jacob came out upon the slain, all the people that are killed. So they're going out there killing all the men, right, and plundered the city, which means they took all the goodies, whatever was good, or whatever was of value, they plundered the city. And it's not likely that it's just Simeon and Levi here. At this point, we think the other brothers are probably getting involved with the plundering now that it's already been done. Now that all the males are gone and they can't protect themselves, they're not just going to take possessions. It takes even more because of their sister been defiled, right? They took their sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, whatever they had. So they took everything, but it goes on even more. And all their wealth, and all their little ones, and their wives, and they took captive. So the wives were just part of the plunder. So those wives just lost their husbands, right? They got killed. Those that got circumcised, and they're killed. And now you're being taken to Jacob and his caravan and his group and all that. And just imagine all that's going there. All the little ones, all their wives, they took captive and they plundered even all that was in their houses. I mean, they went through. This is why it's probably more than just Levi and Simeon. They probably got all of the brothers involved as far as the plundering. But the two that deceived them, Levi and Simeon, was all about the circumcision and trying to get them to put themselves in a vulnerable position. That was the two guys, the two sons. But as time goes on, the whole of the family gets involved. Then you get to the reaction of Jacob. Now this is where it gets even more interesting, I think. When you think about Jacob, I mean, obviously a tragedy is taking place. Several tragedies are taking place. As Dinah is violated, and then they deceive them. They used a sign of God, of circumcision, and to pervert it, to use it in an evil way. And as a result, they massacre this entire town. That's an incredible thing. But notice what Jacob says. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious. Obnoxious is kind of an interesting word, you know, where you come across in an arrogant way, but it actually means to stink. Literally, it's to stink. You make me stink in front of anybody else in the area. You make me look really bad, obnoxious, and you make me look stink. among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, since I am few in number compared to all those, I'm few in number, but they're all looking down on me because of what you guys have done, right? Since I am few in number, and they gather themselves together against me and kill me. The point is, he's thinking, look, one more time, you guys did this evil thing, and now the people around us are going to come after us because we're looked at as being the ones that did the evil. Well, they did. And so he's worried about how he looks more than anything. He says, I shall be destroyed, my household and I. Now, there's a perfect example of no faith. God said, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to be with you. You're going to have descendants. There's going to be a great multitude of descendants. And he's thinking, no, I'm going to die, and all my kids are going to die, and whatever God said can't be true. You can see how there's no faith going on there at all. So it's pretty obvious there. So there's a lot going on here. There's the evils, again, of the massacre, the abusing, the rite of circumcision, and this breach of contract, which means they said one thing in an agreement, in good faith. It looked like the people of Shechem were actually agreeing to it. And they said, well, this is what it takes to make things right. We're willing to do it. And yet they lied. Again, they learned from their father very well. Just recently, it might have been a couple of years that passed because of the fact that they've grown up a little bit between 34 and 35, those chapters, 33, 34 rather. But you get the idea. They learned from their father. He lied to his own brother. Why can't we lie too? And so the chip off the old block in that regard. Anyway, I'm sitting there thinking about a whole lot of the verses that come to mind. But Jacob is not Israel in his action. Jacob is, he's acting like Jacob. He's not acting like a prince of God. He's acting like, I'm thinking about his own self more than anything. There's a lot of verses to go on with it. But as a result of this event, and I will point out in Genesis 49, at the end of the book of Genesis, right, it's 50 chapters, chapter 49, Jacob blesses all the different sons, the 12 sons, right? He goes through and makes a blessing for them. He has a different set of words for Levi and Simeon because of what happens here in Genesis 34. 49:5, he says, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. They're very cruel. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, which is a lot more than a man, a whole town, right? And in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. It's a pictorial way of saying, these guys are cruel. These guys are dreadful. Then he says, and this is supposed to be the blessing. He's blessing. If you go through the rest of the chapter, he's blessing the different sons. Verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. The picture is, as you go on as in history and time, you notice that Simeon isn't a very large tribe. And they very quickly seem to get absorbed actually into Judah. They become an insignificant tribe. And Levi, remember, is the tribe that's not actually given a land promise. They're actually the priestly tribes. And so they were kind of the priests for the whole of the nation. So both of them do not have any land, have very little land as a result. So what he's saying here in Genesis 49, it based on Genesis 34, that you're not going to be blessed like many of the other sons will be blessed. I think that's pretty obvious. And then, so the son's reaction to their father's response. He's worried about how it makes him look, right? This whole thing and all the violations, the massacre and the violation and all that. In fact, it's likely that Jacob would have had a different response if Dinah was actually the daughter of Rachel. Right? Do you see that? If it was the daughter of Rachel, his favorite, he probably would have had a lot more favorites. Because it's from Leah, it's not his favorite wife, right? Like Rachel is. And so I think he has a different response. He's worried about how he looks among all the other people. And then the last verse. But they said to him, should he treat our sister like a harlot? Meaning, well, they're just offering us money to make it right. Well, money isn't going to make it right. Obviously. But they were trying to do what they thought was to try to make it right, try to bring some reconciliation. The event took place. It's bad. It's very bad. And they're really coming back at their father saying, you're worried about how you look, and yet your daughter was violated, and they're just offering money like she's a prostitute. You can see they have very little respect for Jacob. It's pretty obvious. They're like, who are you to tell us about it? And look at all the things that you've done. They don't go into all those details, but all the things that Jacob had done in the past, and lying and the deceitfulness and all this of Jacob, and you're trying to act like you're such a high and mighty spiritual guy to us? We did what we thought was right because these guys violated your own daughter and you don't seem to care. Seems to be the implication of what they're after. Anyway, I think that it's an interesting passage. What they did to them was actually really, really evil. And a couple other points you can look at. When you look at the chart, you know, they were in the land of Shechem. He was supposed to be down in Bethel. Bethel is where it's supposed to be located. That's where God called him to come back to. He almost obeyed the Lord. He came into Canaan, but he didn't go to the city that God called him. And because he's not in the place that God appointed him to be, he gets himself in big time trouble. And that obviously is an obvious principle for us, where we get ourselves in big time trouble, where we're kind of obeying what the Lord wanted us to do or wants us to do, but we don't do it all. He might want us to do something else, and we say, no, I don't want to do all that. And now you're only going to get yourself in trouble, at least from this context. Anyway, hopefully we learned a lot from it. God is communicating how oftentimes we can be just like they are in a lot of ways. Father, thank you once again for your grace and your mercy. Thank you for just being so open and bold and showing us what these people were really like. And we think of them as heroes of the faith, and you used them in a mighty way, and you blessed them in a mighty way, but they really messed up in a lot of ways as well. Help us to just want to, desire to, give our hearts over to you and everything that you want us to do. And we just praise you for it in Jesus' name. Amen.